I will never forget it. It was an ordinary summer afternoon. I was in the backyard enjoying the pool with some friends. My mom was inside taking care of some things around the house. And my college-aged brother was outside tinkering with something mechanical, as was his custom. I'm pretty sure it was his truck. Since he had turned 16, he had dreamed of buying a brand new Dodge Ram pickup truck with a Cummins turbo diesel engine and a Warn winch on the front. My parents refused to splurge on such an expensive vehicle for a teenage boy, so for 4 years, my brother saved every penny he made while he drove my dad's hand-me-down 1972 Blazer. Finally, by his sophomore year in college, he saved up enough money for his truck. And so over spring break, he drove home in his brand new Hunter Green Dodge Ram with the Cummins turbo diesel engine and the Warren winch on the front. And his dream had come true. He was so proud of that truck. So there we were in the backyard a couple of months later, after that momentous occasion for my brother. Me there enjoying the pool, my brother enjoying his truck, when my dad came outside with a set of stainless steel knives. You see, my dad had a knack for finding random hobbies, and this time he had discovered the sport of knife throwing. Who knew that was a thing? Only my father. He created a target out of a sheet of plywood and nailed it to our wooden fence. So as my friends and I enjoyed the pool, we would hear the repeated thump, thump, thump of those knives hitting the plywood. Then, after one particular throw, we heard a sound that was more like cling. I looked up and did not see the knife in the plywood. As we all peered around the gate to the other side of the fence, we found the knife standing straight up in the hood of my brother's brand new pickup truck. My dad had actually thrown the knife over the fence and into the precise spot at the top of the driveway where my brother's truck was parked. I won't repeat the words that were shared in that moment, but suffice it to say that I had never seen my brother more angry. I was scared and amused all at the same time. But after those brief but sharp words, my brother did not speak to my father at all. It was a long few days around my house. I'm not sure what happened to break the silence, but eventually forgiveness was extended and peace was restored. My family can laugh about this story now, but I assure you it was no laughing matter at the time. I think we have a tendency to get more upset with our family than with anyone else. The most bitter arguments, the hardest feelings, the longest grudges, and the harshest words I have witnessed have been between family members. I'm not sure why that is, but I think it's that the depth of our hurt corresponds to the depth of our love. It wouldn't hurt so bad if we didn't care about each other so deeply. It is harder for us to accept failure and disappointment from those who were supposed to love us unconditionally than from anyone else. Sometimes we sentimentalize the importance of family, but when we are honest, we all know that being family can be hard. Even the families that look so perfect from the outside have issues and tensions and dynamics under the surface that often rear up in times of stress. There's the pressure not to disappoint, the bitter wounds that haven't healed, the stories that have been left untold. Families, as beautiful as they can be, are complicated. And yes, family was even complicated for Jesus. In our New Testament lesson today from the Gospel of Mark, Jesus had begun to make a name for himself as a teacher and a healer. As he returned home after commissioning 12 followers to be disciples, a crowd had formed, including his mother and brothers. Imagine his family's concern about his recent, shall we say, atypical behavior. They worry that he is out of his mind, leaving behind a stable home and job to cast out demons and preach about the kingdom of God. So they come to stage an intervention. When the disciples told Jesus that his family was there to see him, he rebuffed them, saying, "Who are my mother and brothers? Whoever does the will of God." Now, as a mama, I have to admit that that response from Jesus seems a little harsh. As you read the story, you can almost feel the tension in the room. But knowing what I know about Jesus, I don't think Jesus was really indifferent to his family. Jesus was living out this tension in his own life between his loyalty to his physical family and to his spiritual one. Jesus' nuclear family was an important part of who he was, but he understood that God's family is bigger than biology. He made clear that his first devotion was to be faithful to the call of God upon his life. Do you remember another story about Jesus and his mama? It takes place at the foot of Jesus' cross. And Mary is there, along with some other women and Jesus' beloved disciple. In those days, a woman's children were her pension and Social Security and Medicare. What would happen to Mary when Jesus was gone? So Jesus looked down from his cross in the last moments of his life, and he charged Mary to adopt a new son, and he charged John to take care of Mary. Her welfare and safekeeping were among the last thoughts he ever had. In these two stories, Jesus shows us what family looks like. Jesus uses the sacred symbols of mother and brother and sister to tell all the world that spiritual kinship is stronger than biological kinship. Love is thicker than blood. Family, for Jesus, is a picture of adoption. He adopted as brothers and sisters all who do the will of God, and he charged Mary and John to adopt one another in love. Jesus didn't reject his family, but he didn't sentimentalize it either. He redefined what family looks like. As Barbara Brown Taylor put it, for him, family was not a matter of whose chromosomes you carry around inside of you, but whose image you are created in. It was not a matter of who has the same last name or lives at the same address, but who serves the same God. There was no family tree in his Holy Bible. As much as his ancestors must have mattered to him, it was more like a family forest that he walked around in, with relatives collected from all over the place, some from one family and some from another, all of them gathered in one place because of their allegiance to one Father. Jesus made family bigger. He stretched out the circle to pull in the wider family, the family of God. And he teaches us that our families can grow bigger too. Now, embracing this kind of Jesus family does not make our own personal family's problems go away. Adopting new brothers and sisters and parents and children does not bring our lost ones back. Building new bridges does not erase the hard memories of bridges burned. But adopting Jesus' style of family does help us with something. By stretching our circles, we resist the temptation to be defined by what we lack. When we name and claim what and who we do have, we experience love in new places and in new ways. So, what do we do when we don't know quite what to do with our families? How do we heal when those who love us most misunderstand us, hurt us, or have gone on before us? How can we be family to one another when we feel sad or guilty or lonely or abused? Chuck Poole has a great sermon in his book, The Tug of Home, entitled, Will Someone Say the Blessing?, whose title I have borrowed for this sermon. In the sermon, Chuck tells the sad story of Esau. If you remember, Esau was cheated out of his father's blessing by his conniving mother, Rebekah, and his brother, Jacob. Esau's cry to his father is just pitiful. Have you only one blessing, Father? Bless me too. Poole says, Esau's voice has found its echo in every generation. Nobody wants to live an unblessed life. Everybody yearns to hear someone say the blessing for them, to them, about them. I love you. I delight in you. And I am proud of you, not because of what you have done, but because of who you are. The hunger to be blessed is the common yearning of every heart. Whether or not that hunger is satisfied is one of the most critical factors in every person's life. Our lives are shaped and colored by the presence or the absence of the blessing. Jesus, in the agony of the cross, thought of the loneliness of his mother in the days ahead, and in his last moments offered his mother a blessing. What if we, too, can find healing and hope in a blessing? What if we can widen our circles of family by claiming and blessing those who have been family for us? On the first Mother's Day after having a child of my own, I had a newfound appreciation for my mother. We had had our share of misunderstandings through the years, but after carrying a child and giving birth and experiencing the joys and the frustrations of motherhood, I grew in a deeper respect of the gifts and the blessings that my mother had given me. So that year for Mother's Day, I decided to offer her a blessing. I wrote her a letter of love and appreciation, not only for all that she had done for me and provided for me, but of who she had been for me. That was 11 years ago. 2 years ago, I found myself experiencing my first Mother's Day after she died, wondering how to honor her in a new way. I decided to write a letter of blessing and appreciation to some other women in my life who had been like mothers to me. They were Diane and Becky, the moms of two of my best friends who had welcomed me into their homes and their families and who had shown up for my family in hard times. There was Barbara, who had been my minister and helped me to nurture and embrace my own call to ministry. And Kay, whose wisdom I admire and seek out often. Writing those letters was healing. And the practice reminded me of the wide expanse of people who were family for me and who showed the love of Jesus to me. We can bless those who have given their gifts to us, male or female, blood kin or not, older or younger. If you can't bless your own mother or father, brothers or sisters, you can bless someone who has loved you and nurtured you like the best of family does. Author Frederick Buechner wrote, "Our mothers, like our fathers, are to be honored," the good book says. But if Jesus is to be our guide, honoring them does not mean either idealizing them or idolizing them. It means seeing them both for who they are and for who they are not. It means speaking the truth to them. It means the best way of repaying them for their love is to love God and neighbor as faithfully and selflessly as at their best our parents have tried to love us. Much of the time, being family is not the stuff of Hallmark cards or filtered social media posts. It can be as much messy as beautiful. But when we recognize the blessings that we have received from those who have shaped our lives and make the conscious effort to offer those gifts to others, we can find redemption and love, healing and hope. Somebody say the blessing. Amen.